You could be right and I could be wrong. We could just fight and we could be strong. You could be right and I could be wrong. We could just fight and we could.
This is Bridge the Gap with Mark and Dave, the program that seeks for the truth no matter where it is found. I'm Mark.
And I'm David.
So why did you end up actually inviting him to live with you guys?
I wanted to provide an opportunity for Adam to live in the home with his own kids and have that chance to raise them like I wanted to do with my own kids so bad. That made a lot of sense to me.
And did you think that he would get more healthy by living with you?
I'd hope so. Cindy and I really thought at the rate he was going living in Ogden, he was going to die in 6 months. His health was getting worse and worse. And, you know, he had just gone through a couple injuries where he dropped something on his foot, on his left foot, and it needed surgery. And then he was getting surgery for that. And then as soon as that was getting better, he just accidentally dropped something on his right foot. And now I look back on that and I'm thinking, he's injuring himself on purpose to get into the hospital. That's what Cindy said that she suspected that he had done, because he had cut off the tip of his finger when they were married, and then he cut off a little more of the tip of that same finger later on.
Wow.
And I look back on that now and I think maybe he was drug seeking, and so he was dropping things on his toes so that he could go to the hospital and get pain meds. He was injuring his finger, maybe subconsciously on purpose, so that he could have a reason to get meds. But he was down to like 160 pounds when we let him move in with us. And he did start getting better because he didn't have all the stress of living on his own and everything else. And so his health started to improve. And now fast forward 4 years later, and he's still living with us.
It started to improve, but then right now it's pretty bad, or?
He went through a period of time where it was good enough that he could actually get a job. He did have a job working at Cabela's for a little while. And when he was doing that job, he was probably at his prime when he was doing the best. And then he actually got good enough that he saved enough money to buy a car. And he was making payments on that car. So he was driving his kids around in that car a little bit. And it was kind of a fun thing, but it only lasted 2 months. Because by June or July, he got a DUI. And then the car was impounded. And there's a whole story there. He has given me permission to talk about his story. And I want to be careful about what I say, because I'm not trying to be critical. And I want to protect anybody who may or may not have want to be involved in the story. So I'll just have to keep names out. But he was in the car on a day in July, and he was with a friend in the house. And I kind of suspected they were both drunk, because they were kind of being loose and they were watching a program on TV, and he was talking to me disrespectfully, and he's usually pretty respectful, about how I wouldn't understand why they'd be watching this program. And it just kind of made it like, you're that Mormon guy and we're this other group. You don't understand what we do, but we do what we do kind of conversation. And by the way, the rule is at the house, no drugs, no drinking. You move into the house with us and you will follow those rules. So we want to help you. We want to help you get better. We respect that you have a lifestyle that you live when you're on your own. But if the condition for coming in and moving in with us in our house and living with your kids is that you do not drink alcohol and you do not take drugs. And he agreed. I suspected he was drunk that night when he was with his friend. I didn't really know, but I walked out of the room. And then I started thinking, maybe I should go back in and talk to them about this. It was kind of gnawing on me. So I went down to talk to them, and they weren't in the room anymore. I'm like, oh, well, I guess they're gone. So I walked out the front door and, oh, there they are. They're on the front porch now. And there's a bottle of vodka right in between the two of them. When I walked out, they kind of moved it out of view a little bit. I'm like, for sure, they're drinking now, you know. But yeah. They walked out of the house. Maybe they suspected that I was on to them and they wanted to get out of the house, right? So I needed to gather my wits about me a little bit. Now I know that they're drinking, but they're on the front porch. I just decided I'm going to think about this for a second because I don't want to just react. And so I walked away and then I thought about it. I said, yeah, I need to go talk to them. I walked back out and they're gone again. About 1 o'clock in the morning, it was really late. There's this little noises going around the house. And his oldest son comes in and wakes up my wife and they kind of whisper to each other. It wakes me up and I can hear some commotion going on. And then all of a sudden, his oldest son drives away. I don't know, maybe an hour later, he comes back in and the window, because it's in the summer, it's open. And so I can hear everything outside going on. And it wakes me up again when he drives back in and Adam gets out of the car and he's yelling at the whole neighborhood, saying weird stuff. So I get up and I walk over the window to see what's going on. And Adam rips off his shirt for some weird reason and he throws it on the ground. And then they both come in the house.
And so how long ago is this?
This was maybe it was just last year, 2018.
And was he still working at Cabela's at the time?
Yes, he was working at Cabela's at the time. But what happened, the stories kind of got convoluted. I wasn't getting a straight story from anybody.
One thing is for sure is Adam drank a lot of alcohol and drove his car.
Yes, that's all I know for sure. Evidently, they were driving that car and whoever was driving it ran it off the road. And got a flat tire, maybe busted up the axle, and they're just outside the car trying to figure out what to do. And a policeman comes up. And the policeman's questioning him about the accident. And he can obviously tell that they're drunk, both of them. And so the question is, well, who was driving? It turns out that Adam got the DUI.
Because it was his car.
And it's because he said he was driving.
Oh.
The truth turns out that he covered for his friend.
According to Adam.
According to Adam. And I actually questioned his friend the next morning, and he admitted that he was. So now I know that Adam covered for him and took the DUI for his friend. I mean, this is what you do for your buddies, right? This is Adam's first DUI.
And I got to say, according to both of them, and I always say this type of stuff because here I am sitting here. I mean, I'm a recovered alcoholic drug addict, so I've lied more than 10 people should ever lie in their life. And so I get how that works, you know, so.
Adam's really proud that he took one for his friend.
And maybe he did, maybe he didn't, maybe he actually was driving.
I think that the facts are that he did do that for his friend.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's got to deal with his DUI. He's got to, you know, now I've got to take him to court. He's got to pay several fines. He's got to go through that whole program. And a year's gone by. And that's why I think, because it's 2019 right now. And just a couple months ago, I had to take him in again to have his fines and stuff updated. He's trying to pay some money and stuff. So I believe it would have been probably just last year that this all happened.
And did that kind of mark the beginning of kind of a downfall?
Yes. I think he got discouraged at that point that, well, I can't keep my car. Now he's getting sick and I think he's getting depressed and he just lost hope. And so he just let the car go back.
Oh.
Yeah, he just let the car get repoed. That way he didn't have the car payment. He was back to no responsibility. He was feeling sicker and he started getting more sick and then he started getting on and off suicidal again. And, you know, he's just struggling. And then he ended up losing his job at Cabela's because he just couldn't go back into work. And he just started going back down, down, down from that point on. Here we are 4 years after he's moved in, going up and down, up and down.
With physical health, mental health, combination of the two.
Yeah.
Drug-seeking behavior and just kind of all of it mixed together.
Yeah. There was one Christmas where he went up to Idaho. This was the first time that there was any awareness of alcohol drinking since he had moved into our house. Supposedly, he had been not drinking alcohol while he was at our house, but when he went up to Idaho for Christmas, he drank some beers and perhaps some cough medicine or something. I'm not sure what's going on, but But there was a big talk about this amongst the family. Uh-huh. And it turned into a big argument. Like, nobody believes me. And yeah, I did take a beer. But I'm like, Adam, everybody's accusing you of getting really drunk. I'm like, I don't have any reason to not believe that you just had a beer. But because you had one beer, now it opens the door. And if you wouldn't have had the beer, there would be no question. You know the rule is at the house, you know. You weren't technically at our house when it happened. We'll let this one slide. You'll continue to honor the rule. And we had that understanding, right? And then another time, I was away at a young women's camp. And I came home early, unexpected. And I open the door and I walk in. And he's at the house with his youngest son with a bottle of vodka on the chair between him and his youngest son, and he's trying to get his son to drink it.
And his right son, when you walk
right
in.
Right when I walk in the door, he's handing this bottle of vodka to his son, telling him to drink it. And his son sees me walk in, and immediately he's like, Dad, look, Mark's right there, you know? Mm-hmm. But he's too drunk to really have it registered right away. And so he just kind of looks at me at first like, oh, hey, Mark. And all of a sudden you can just tell it kind of clicked like, oh, probably shouldn't have this vodka, you know, here when you're walking in the door. And so it's kind of a slow reaction to it all, you know. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he gets up. He's like, it's not what you think it is. I'm really interested to hear your story. I'm listening. And so he takes me out of the room. So his son's not there. Gets me by himself. And he says, look, I caught my son last night drinking with one of his friends, and it was a really big deal. And I thought that maybe if I force fed him some alcohol, that it would make him sick and it would teach him a lesson. And that way he would never do it again. Do you think that's a good idea? I'm like, Adam, I don't think it's ever a good idea to feed a minor alcohol. I don't care what you're thinking. I was like, but I will verify your story to see if it's true. So what's his friend's name that he was drinking with last night? And he gave me the name, and I got on the phone and I called his friend's mom, and I attempted to verify everything Adam said. Turned out to be a big made-up story. His friend was not with Isaac the night before. He had alibis. He was with other people. There was no question that it was just a made-up story. And so I call up Cindy, and I was like, Cindy, his story didn't check out. I don't know what to do about this. I'm really concerned. He was drinking alcohol with his son in the house.
And how old was his son at the time?
He was probably, everything kind of blurs together, but he's probably 14. Because like I said, during the 4 years that he's been with us, I caught him like 2 or 3 times, you know. But I always thought they were isolated incidences. Mm-hmm. I didn't really understand how pervasive the problem was. Well, okay, we'll give you a second chance, or we'll give you a third chance, but my goal here is not to kick you out. I'm not looking for a reason to get you out of the house. I want you to be here for your kids. I really want to help you. And I genuinely want you to get better. So if I was just looking for a reason to kick you out, I wouldn't ever let you come in to begin with, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was always my position. I always felt like he was a really good guy that struggled with a drug addiction and alcohol addiction. Mm-hmm. And if he could just kick that, the true Adam would come out. Mm-hmm. And I still believe that. I still believe he's an amazing guy with a drug addiction. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how to help him.
Yeah, well, the biggest step and the hardest step and the first step, it just so happens to be, is for him to recognize that, yes, I have an addiction and I'm powerless to it. And from my talks with him, he's not there, because it's all about his physical sickness, not about his drug abuse and addiction.
Well, and that's where I think you come into the picture, right? You're my new ministering companion who's supposed to be helping Adam, and you start to talk to him about all of your prior drug abuse and drug use, I should say. He's found a friend in you. Mm-hmm. And he's really encouraged. And it's like there's almost this hope. Oh, maybe he can help me. And this is the way it's being couched with me. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I think he understands me. This is going to be so good. I'm going to get better. But then you...
So he said that to you?
Yeah, he was really hopeful. And genuinely, I felt like he was like, this is going to be good for all of us. I'm going to be able to kick this because I'm going to get some help, right?
Was it just that first time? Has he said that since we went to the meeting?
No, since the meeting, which you should talk... that's your meeting.
Yeah.
You need to tell about that. But since the meeting, he has not talked about it ever. He avoids the conversation. Tell the listeners about that meeting and what happened there.
Yeah, so I saw that I was Mark's ministry and companion. That's why I reached out. Then I saw, okay, Adam is one of the guys that we're ministering to. And so went over and we had a good talk, all of us, and opened up with Adam. And Adam instantaneously opened up with me. And then I don't know if it was that first time or second time, but the decision was, oh, hey, David, I'm going to meetings. So, Adam, do you want to go to an AA meeting with me? And how about tomorrow morning? And so it was all, yep, let's do it. Everyone kind of pretty hopeful on it. And so I show up the next morning at 6:10 a.m. or something like that to pick him up. And he's ready to go. And we drive. We stop at the gas station on the way, get a Coke. And then we drive to the AA meeting. Kind of as we were getting to the AA meeting, he was starting to show that he was getting sick. We get to the AA meeting and he's getting sicker. And then we get in the AA meeting or outside of it, but in the building. And then he really starts getting sick and he starts crouching over and not crying, but just wincing in pain.
Now, what were you thinking genuinely when you saw all of this? Because I've been living that for four years.
Yeah. In the moment, it was like, okay, yeah, this guy's in pain. Looking back and even later that day. But yeah, in the moment, it was like, this guy's in pain or at least wants me to see that he's in pain. He's showing pain. Whatever he's feeling, I don't know, but he's showing pain.
He's not trying to either.
And then the opposite, right? He's actually trying to show it so clearly, right? Because very quickly, what's interesting is I don't think he brought it up. He waited for me to bring it up. I was like, do you need to go, like, do you need to go to the hospital or something? And he's like, I think that would be a good idea. And then he's like, this is why I don't have any friends. Like, this is why I never can do anything. And he didn't label what he was saying by that. But I'm guessing it's because, like, he gets sick all the time and stuff. But what's interesting is in that moment, I thought it was because you were always going for something. Like you don't have friends and you're not able to spend this time to go to a meeting or whatever because you have something else on your mind. You're planning something else. That's why. My opinion. Yeah. Anyway, so we took him to the hospital and what's interesting is on the way to the hospital, he kept showing pain, but I kept asking him questions and talking to him. And he opened up to me a lot about his marijuana use specifically. And I forget why that was such a big part of it, but he shared with me like how much marijuana he smoked his whole life. And I couldn't believe it, how much marijuana he was currently smoking, whether that be through actual marijuana or the cartridges, like the vaporizer marijuana, and how like the amounts that he was telling me, I couldn't fathom doing. And I've smoked a lot of weed in my life, but what he was saying, I couldn't fathom doing and was pretty blown away by it. But he was just an open book. Like he was just totally sharing it with me.
Yeah. Well, and when you came back and told me about that, that blew me away. It was like, you got to be kidding me. And then it was kind of like the cat's out of the bag now, mm-hmm. because it all made sense because just like, a couple weeks before that, I'd just taken him from the emergency room the umpteenth time. Right. I'm getting ready to take him back from the, I dropped him off at the emergency room. I'm driving home and I get a call from his youngest son who is heaving in the bathroom at a gas station just outside from school because he's just overdosed. He believes on something. And he's asking me to take him to the emergency room because he's really sick and he thinks he's going to die. So I go pick him up from the gas station and he's got, you know, puke all over his shirt. Clearly he was miserable and he was not feeling good. And he's like, I'm like, well, what do you think happened? He's like, well, I took a couple of vapes off my friend's, you know, e-cig or whatever, and it must have been laced with something. I don't know. Why would he do that to me? And I'm really mad that my friend would, you know, play a game like that on me, and I think I've overdosed, and I think I'm going to die, you know, because he was really sick. And so I take him in the emergency room, and Adam's still there getting ready to be checked out. And it's like,
at the same emergency room.
Yeah, the same emergency room. So Adam knows, you know, like I got it from here, no problem. You know, he's kind of acting like the expert. I'll take care of this, you know. And I hung out and I was trying to be supportive, and I kind of listened to what I was allowed to, because the HIPAA rules, if they tell me to leave or if I'm not in the room, those conversations are always private without me. And so it's really hard for me to know what's really going down. And this time they're kind of letting me hang out, and we're talking about things. And so it comes out that his son had taken some marijuana cartridges, I guess mm-hmm. that was. And they decided that it was marijuana poisoning. That's what they called it, that he was suffering from marijuana poisoning. And so he quickly recovered and we took him home. So it turns out that he's getting his own son. You figured this out, and you're the one that told me this, that he told you that how he gets his marijuana is he gets his own son to purchase it for him at school, right?
Or I don't know about school, but yeah. Or through, he gets it through his
through
son.
Through his son, or mm-hmm. connections through his son, mm-hmm. which of course was really upsetting to me. At that point, I'm on the offensive. I would always been Adam's advocate for 4 years. Always, you know, Cindy's kind of more on the offensive, and I was always defending him because I really believe, and always did believe, and I still do believe, that Adam's just a good guy that struggles with addiction. Now, suddenly, I'm starting to wonder, has he just been feigning that he believes in, and just, you know, that he is a believer in God and all these things, just because he knows that's what I want to hear? And has he just been saying that because he wants to stay in my house, and it's just so that he can have a place to live and, you know, not have responsibility? And I started, and I really was upset. So I went on the offensive and was like, I don't want this anymore. It's not what I thought was going to be good for his kids has been a mistake in judgment on my part. It's not healthy for his kids. I want him out. And I started telling Cindy that. And then suddenly she went on the defense, like, Mark, don't overreact. I think, you know, maybe, you know, we should talk about this, but we need to think about how to go about this. We can't just react. This was all within a 24-hour period. I go to bed that night, still upset, right? And I do fall asleep, but about 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm awakened. And a voice, an audible voice, comes to me and says, if you do this to the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. And now I'm like having a argument with the Lord. I'm like, you're right. I shouldn't be so angry. But what do I do now? How do I keep him? How do I keep from enabling him and still help him? I don't know how, Lord. I get it. He's a good person. I know that you love him. I've loved him. I'm just so frustrated. I don't know how to fix this. What do I do now? And that was, I was kind of like doing a little wrestle with the Lord. It calmed me down, and I wasn't as angry anymore, but I still didn't know what the answer was. And I discussed this with another friend of mine afterwards, and he's like, look, Mark, I know you, and you shouldn't just let him live in your house for the rest of your life. That's not the answer. And I'm like, you're right. That's not what the Lord told me. He didn't say, let Adam live with you for the rest of his life. He just said, if you do it unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it to me. I'm not sure what that means. I just know it calmed me down mm-hmm. and that there's some truth to that. And now I've got to figure out what to do next. And then you came along. And now we're on this journey. And now we've started this podcast. Mm-hmm. And we don't know where it's going to go. And we don't know where things are going to go with Adam. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to be able to kick this or not. I don't know if he wants to be able to kick this or not. But you do, and you have, and you can give him hope.
Yeah, I don't know if he wants to. But what I've talked with you about a lot, and
what I feel the biggest gift, I mean, I've received so many gifts in my life, but one of the biggest gifts was three people really close to me that loved me, sat me down when they knew I was struggling and they knew I was using, and it was all bad. And they asked me what they can do to help. And so my thoughts to you were, hey, let's pass that gift to Adam, you know, like let's get, you know, and I think that's part of the first steps. Like, okay, who's there? Who's the ones that are sitting down with him and having that conversation and asking him what they can do to help him? Because it gives him the opportunity to speak up. And does he take the help? Does he say, yes, like I want help or whatever? Because that's the first step. Because if he doesn't want help, he's just self-destructing and no one can stop it. But if he wants help, I mean, that's huge. That's huge. Yeah. That's the humility. That's the willingness. That willingness, right? Willingness is so crucial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I personally, I've run through the gamut of emotions through all of this. You know, I honestly believe, I really do, that when he's sick, he really is sick. And I see that when he's sick, he's miserable. And I notice that he prays when he's really sick. And he talks about going back to church and he talks about quitting tobacco because that's the only thing that's really keeping him from going back to church. But then when he's better and he's not feeling so sick, it's like I've noticed that his behavior doesn't necessarily align with that, because he talks about it when he's sick, but then when he's not sick, he likes to do dark stuff. So what is it? Who are you?
Well, he doesn't know who he is at all.
Well, and I choose to believe that he's a good man trapped in an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And he just is struggling with coming out and figuring out how to do that. But I also understand and know that I can't make that choice for him. I can give him an opportunity, but he's going to have to come to the party.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. He can't do it himself. Like, by himself, he can't do it. It's impossible. It's like waging a war against your own brain. Your brain's going to outdo you. But with help, if he wants to, he'll be able to do it. Like, definitely, but it's just a matter of if he wants to. But we need to invite him, right? Like, that's the thing is, like, right now he's drowning, and I know, like, there's people trying to help. You're trying to help him. But, yeah, it's like, hey, we really need to, like, put our heads together and, okay, what is actually helping him? What's not helping him? Let's stop doing the things that we thought were helping him that aren't helping him and start doing things that actually are helping him, which are going to make everyone uncomfortable, but yeah, they're going to help him. But everyone's going to get uncomfortable. The whole situation is going to get more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that's part of getting better.
That's it for this episode of Bridge the Gap.
Truth Seekers,